This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 311, for the weekend of January 19th through January 21st. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and you are listening to Backseat Box Office, a podcast where we talk about movies, TV, and other stuff in between. So, Art, how's it going over there?
It's going pretty good. I don't know. It's I'm at a loss.
You're at a loss?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I blanked. I don't know. Yeah, no, just generally good. Just, I think I still haven't, I still need more sleep. I didn't get a lot of sleep the night before. I feel like I'm still a little spacey.
All right. Well, speaking of uninspired, let's move over to what happened at the box office last week. So usually we start off by talking about how the box office did, about movies that did great or didn't do so great. So here's for the weekend of January 12th to January 14th. Here's your top five. At number one, we have Jumanji: Welcome to the Jungle at $28.1 million. At number two, wow, jumping up from 15 to 2, The Post at $19.4 million, which is a 1,040% increase. At number three, the only new release in the top five, The Commuter, at $13.7 million. At number four, we have, in its fourth week of release, The Greatest Showman at $12.5 million. And at number five, Insidious: The Last Key at $12.4 million. So there's your top five. And I should, since I brought up the weeks of release, this is the fourth week for Jumanji and also the fourth week for The Post.
Yeah.
Anything surprising, Art?
How about Paddington? Opening up at number seven.
Surprised about that?
That's very surprising. I thought, it had 100% reviews, 100% positive review on Rotten Tomatoes last week. And people did not turn out to see that. 3,700 screens made $11 million. That is surprising. I thought the turnout would be better than that.
All right, so let's look at Paddington 1. Paddington 1's opening weekend was just about $19 million.
Yeah, that's a big drop for, like I said, between as well as it was reviewed and what the first movie did. So I don't know what went wrong.
And usually, maybe it might be a little different because it came out at a different time of the year than the one that this came out. No, Paddington 1 came out January 16th, 2015.
Yeah, no. That seems like a fail right there. And we don't have a budget listed on it on Box Office Mojo, so we don't know how badly that is for them. But you got to imagine it's somewhat significant with the a completely animated bear in it.
Yes. Did it say the budget on the
on the actual page? No, in the actual no production budget listed.
Okay. So for one, they listed $55 million per budget.
$55 million. Yeah. Okay, and that came out 2 years ago.
Yeah, 2015.
Yeah.
So, all right. So there was our super entertaining look at last week's box office. So now let's move on over to Art's going to tell us about one movie that came out this weekend, or that's coming out this weekend. Excuse me.
Yes, not quite out yet.
Yeah.
Out by the time anybody's probably going to listen to this. Okay, but so we have 12 Strong. It is rated 50% on the tomato meter. That is a rotten rating. It is 29 fresh, 29 rotten. It is rated 95% out of 2,600 users who want to see it. Chris Hemsworth, Thor, the Avengers film, and Oscar nominee Michael Shannon, Revolutionary Road, Nocturnal Animals, star in 12 Strong, a powerful new war drama from Alcon Entertainment, Black Label Media, and Jerry Bruckheimer Films, based on the book best-selling book. That is what it says.
Cut and paste. This is more evidence of cut and paste. Go ahead.
Yes, based on the best-selling book, Horse Soldiers. It is a story of heroism based on true events that unfold a world away in the aftermath of 9/11. Rated R for war violence and language throughout. Genres action, adventure, and drama. Directed by Nikolai Fugelsig. Written by Peter Craig and Ted Talley. We have no runtime and no rating. Oh, rated R, sorry. Just no runtime. Let's see, who else do we have? We have Michael Pena. Trevante Rhodes, those are, there are quite a few people in this, but nobody that I regularly recognize.
IMDb says that the runtime is 2 hours and 10 minutes.
2 hours and 10 minutes. Okay. Good on you, IMDb. Why couldn't they copy and paste that?
Yeah. So, did you mention Rob Riggle?
No. Who's Rob Riggle? Oh, Rob Riggle.
Yeah.
I do recognize him. I'm not really a war movie guy. I haven't been for a long time.
All right, so here's some snarky reviews about this movie, 12 Strong. Justin Chang from the LA Times says, what makes 12 Strong objectionable and what will make it appealing to some is that its attempt to induce a kind of amnesia in the audience. Doesn't give what their final rating was, but that was a rotten. Joshua Rothkopf of Time Out. If you want to feel good about a war with no end, this one's for you. Joe Morgenstern from Wall Street Journal. The numbers don't add up. The movie lacks a discernible attitude towards those desperate days in America's history. We actually got a positive review from Movie Mom. Hemsworth, Shannon, and Pena create real, relatable, and yet heroic characters, and seeing them ride into battle on horseback is genuinely moving and inspiring. She gave it a B. And then Peter Travers, actually another fresh. This is not a movie with time on its hand for character development or scrappy political discussions. What 12 Strong does deliver is a rousing tribute to soldiers whose contributions went unheralded for years. All right, hold on a second.
Sure.
Yeah. No, it could. I don't know. Okay. All right. So, yeah, I, considering I haven't seen Jumanji yet, I don't think I'll be, this will be a, whenever it's on cable.
Yeah, same here.
I mean, it kind of looked like a Michael Bay joint kind of thing.
Yeah. So is
I'm not a big fan of that action style.
Well, Jerry Bruckheimer, very much in that style as well.
Yeah.
So Jerry Bruckheimer Films. So yeah, no, I mean, if my brother-in-law, you know, being the ex-Marine that he is, wanted to go see it, I'd go see it with him. But if he doesn't bring it up, I'm not going to either.
Yeah. All right. So that will end our look at what's coming out this weekend. And so now we're going to move over to Share Time. This is the part of the show where Art and myself talk about what we've been watching, movies, TV, or other entertainment, sometimes games, podcasts, whatever. Art, you have the floor.
Okay, so I did not take good notes this past week, so this is going to be all higgledy-piggledy. I watched Black Lightning. That premiered on Tuesday. And I enjoyed it. I think it still needs to find its feet. The couple of actors that they have in it, I really enjoy. I've enjoyed them in other things. One of the daughters is from Descendants 2. And so I thought that was interesting. I actually sat down and watched it with Aubrey and she's like, oh, look, it's Uma. It's Uma. I'm like, yep, there's Uma. So that was kind of fun. I don't know if it's going to be entirely appropriate for her. It got a little borderline as we were watching it, but it was overall enjoyable. We'll see where it goes.
What did you watch that on?
Here's another thing. I'm glad you asked that question. It is on regular television. It is a CW show. They're thinking it will eventually tie in with the other shows on the CW for DC. This is a DC character. But we watched it the other night, and you know, I was getting home early tonight, and I was like, can we watch more Black Lightning? I said, no, there is no more Black Lightning. You have to wait till next week. She's like, what? That sucks. That's stupid. And I'm like, that's how we used to have to watch TV all the time. You can't just binge shows, and you know, and shows don't just watch. You can't just watch them all the time. It's like, that's just dumb. I'm like, okay. So I have a child who has grown up in the era of binge watching shows, and she doesn't want to watch things on regular television. So yeah, so I told her, nope, you can't watch another one until next week. So, I watched the first episode of season 4 of Black Mirror, the USS McAllister, because one of my coworkers at work, he asked me about it. He asked me if I'd watched Black Mirror. I said I had. He said he had watched, you know, the first episode of the new season, and if I had watched that one, I said no, I hadn't. I said, but I knew a podcast that, you know, did an episode on that if he had some questions. And he's like, oh, okay. And then he's like, oh, and I told him what it was. And, you know, he went and looked it up. And I said, and actually the other podcast that's on that same feed, that's the podcast that I do. So my buddy Tino at work said, oh, I'll check it out. So he listened to the Backseat Producers, and I even listened to Backseat Box Office. And so he immediately... I guess the episode, he went back a ways, and you were talking about Whiplash. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, from, you know, listening to it, he sounds like you haven't seen that movie. I said, no, I hadn't. And he's like, okay, well, I'm going to bring that in. So, he just today lent me Whiplash, another one called Once We're Warriors. And, he said, these are two of his favorite films. He wants me to watch them. I said, okay, I'll check them out. So I have a couple of movies to watch from him. Sunday, I spent 4.5 hours playing BattleTech Alpha Strike, and I had an absolute blast. And I am definitely going to be trying to do that more often. I am trying to think. I don't think there was anything else of note that I watched. You know what? I did go back and watch the, there was a celebrity episode of American Ninja Warrior. And the capstone for the night was Stephen Amell from Arrow. Mm-hmm. Running the course. And out of everybody who participated, he was the only one who did the full course and then some extra. And it was a thing to raise money for charity, and it was really cool, and it was really awesome seeing him, run the course and actually do pretty well at it, being as, you know, all the training he does for being on Arrow. I think that about wraps it up. I did not watch any movies. I just, you know, watched some TV and kept it pretty low key.
All right. Well, I have two things that I'm going to talk about. So, all right, good job on doing more stuff than I did. Okay. So I checked out from the library Rough Night.
Okay.
So I wanted to see Scarlett Johansson in a comedy, because we always see her in, you know, Lucy, Ghost in the Shell, Black Widow, and the Marvel movies, that kind of.
Right.
So I was expecting this to be kind of like a Hangover clone.
Right.
With all women.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. That's not what I got.
Okay.
I got more of a Weekend at Bernie's kind of thing.
Okay.
I thought, you know, that I think I've seen 4 comedies in a row. Just to recap, Baywatch, Snatched, Big Sick, and then Rough Night. I probably have to put this one at the bottom.
Okay.
Just because my naive self, I had a problem. There's a lot of drug use in this movie.
Okay.
And I think it's a shortcut in comedy, you know, that, you know, once they're on drugs or they're drunk or something, you know, I don't know if that's true. Maybe not so much, but anyways, but there were some good, I enjoyed the cast It was a little weird for me because the I've watched too much Modern Family, and to see Ty Burrell, who plays Phil, play a super sexually adventurous swinger who's married to Demi Moore down in Miami. I mean, he's almost like that on Modern Family, but it was just, oh man, it was just weird. It was just weird. My skin crawled a little bit. But yeah, there were just some parts of the movie I just didn't think were that funny. Nothing really that surprising. I found out later that this movie was written and directed by someone that's worked on Broad City, because one of the actresses, if you're from Broad City's a show that's on Comedy Central, mm-hmm. kind of thing. I almost want to say it's like a sketch show, but I don't think it's a sketch show. But I mean, it was all right. I did get some good laughs. I mean, it's another movie where Kate McKinnon is probably the funniest character in the film. So you know, I'd have to say, you know, I enjoyed it, but I've enjoyed some pretty bad comedies, and I think I enjoyed this pretty bad comedy. They probably could have done better. Oh, and the Mayhem guy plays one of the bad guys in this, so that was a little weird. Seeing, you know, because clearly being in those commercials is the best thing he'll ever do. You know,
yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. He's a bad guy. He's Mayhem. So it makes perfect sense. He's been typecast.
Yeah. Well, you know, what are you going to do? So that was Rough Night, a kind of lukewarm recommendation on Rough Night. And then the other thing is, speaking of binge watching, I'm the type of binger sometimes where I'll go like, okay, 13 episode season, I'll go up to like 11 and then I'll stop. Right? Because there's something else I want to watch. I think that happened with Baywatch. I was in the middle of The Good Place, and then we got The Good Watch The Good Place, and I was watching The Good Place, and then I brought home Baywatch and so all these other movies kind of thing. And I realized, hey, I never finished The Good Place. So I went back to The Good Place. I really, really enjoy this show. And it's killing me because there was like a super twist at the end of season one. And now they're like, they might be on season three or it might be season two. But they're like so far down on season two, and I'm not willing to go through the ad-supported on demand that I can watch online kind of thing. So I'm lazy in my passion here, guys. But anyways, but no, the good place. It's speaking of cast, I enjoy all the cast. They have this actress that plays Janet, who's like the Google of the afterlife.
Okay.
So she can, I mean, it, or it's more like an Alexa type thing where you can ask her anything and she'll like know the answer kind of thing.
Okay.
But there was in the second to the last episode, there was like, please start the train. And she ends up, through some error in her programming, she ends up marrying somebody kind of thing. And she says, I've enacted the ride or die protocol. I cannot start the train until my husband says it's okay. And I literally fell off the couch when that came out of her mouth. But yeah, no, it's The Good Place. I gotta watch some more. All right, so okay. That was my rambling about one movie and one TV series that I've been watching. All right, so now that we're done with share time, now we can start with news. So Art, what do you have for us?
Okay, well, before I even looked at the box office, I put this right at the top of my news queue. Paddington 2 is Rotten Tomatoes' best-reviewed film ever. After receiving 164 reviews, it has still retained its 100% positive rating. This puts the film ahead of Toy Story 2, which previously held the Rotten Tomatoes record for most consecutive fresh reviews without a single rotten review. And so to see that $11 million box office return for a movie that so many people are absolutely loving is just kind of funny. It makes me, you know, they're talking about how rotten reviews are bringing down the box office. Well, here you have a film that's getting nothing but positive reviews and is not bringing in the money.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So who'd you say had the record before Paddington?
They said Toy Story 2 in the article.
Oh, interesting. Was that off Collider?
Nope, this is off Dark Horizons.
Okay, all right. So Collider has Their first paragraph is, less than 2 months ago, Lady Bird scored the distinct honor of becoming Rotten Tomatoes' best-reviewed movie of all time, racking up 164 positive reviews for a 100% fresh rating. Then some idiot who doesn't understand how film criticism works came along and said that it was rotten because he gave it a B-, earning him the attention he sought. Lady Bird's accomplishment of holding on to 100% at 164 was notable because no film since Toy Story 2 had managed it.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So, yeah, interesting. Interesting what we focus on nowadays.
164, it's a magic number.
All right, so I'm gonna start with the weird story here.
Okay.
Emoji movie makes history in Saudi Arabia. Okay, so in the wake of a 35-year-old ban on cinemas in Saudi Arabia being lifted, the reported first film to screen in the conservative Islamic kingdom since his repeal has been revealed. It was the Emoji movie. So they have a state-run cultural hall in the Red Sea city of Jeddah. I hope I'm saying that right. Was the site for screenings of feature-length animated children's film this past weekend in a makeshift theater equipped with a projector, a red carpet, and a popcorn machine. And so cinemas were banned in the early 1980s under pressure from Islamists as Saudi society turned towards a particularly conservative form of religion. New reforms led by 32-year-old Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman have eased many of those restrictions. In a nod to conservatives, films will be censored to make sure they remain in line with the kingdom's moral values. The first permanent theaters could open as early as March. So for now, authorities are sponsoring temporary settings. Authorities expect to open 300 cinemas with 2,000 screens by 2030. Wow.
So
emoji movie.
So were all the poop scenes cut? Or do you think they just pixelated the poop?
I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I could go either way. I could go either way. I mean, you know. Or is poop okay? Maybe it's okay. Maybe they didn't cut the poop at all.
It's never okay.
Poop is never okay. But it's Sir Patrick Stewart as the poop. So
I don't think that
No. You don't think that figures in? Okay. No. All right.
Picard who? Yeah, okay.
Ouch. Ouch. Well, I guess in Saudi Arabia, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, or you want to go Professor X. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Early Panther estimates revised upwards. Early box office estimates for Marvel Studios' Black Panther have been revised upward, with Box Office Pro now reporting that the film is targeting $120 million domestic opening weekend, making it the largest first standalone Marvel film to date, above the $117 million of Spider-Man Homecoming and Guardians of the Galaxy at $94 million. This revision comes in the wake of pre-sale tickets going on sale and smashing records, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, so it's going to be the biggest movie, biggest single opener to date. I can't hardly wait. That's another thing I got to discussing was all the black superheroes, Black Lightning, Black Panther, Black Adam, Falcon. I was like, yeah, there's a lot of these heroes out there that most people have never heard of. But everybody's going to know Black Panther now.
I don't think Undercover Brother would count.
No. Okay, no. Right. Meteor Man, though. Would count.
Oh, okay. That's Townsend, right? Richard?
Something Townsend. Maybe
Stewart. I don't know. No, Stewart, he was the drummer for the Police. I don't know. All right. Here we go with Solo, a Star Wars story.
Peter?
No.
Townsend? No? Okay.
No, sorry. So we still don't have a trailer or anything for Solo, a Star Wars story, but we do have a synopsis. And hopefully they don't use book twice right next to each other.
Hmm.
Okay, so here is the synopsis for Solo. Board the Millennium Falcon and journey to a galaxy far, far away in Solo, a Star Wars story, and on to adventure with the most beloved scoundrel in the galaxy. Through a series of daring escapades deep within a dark and dangerous criminal underworld, Han Solo meets his mighty future co-pilot Chewbacca and encounters the notorious gambler Lando Calrissian, in a journey that will set the course of one of the Star Wars saga's most unlikely heroes. So, yeah, I was hoping they weren't going to be vague about it, but I guess it could be anything.
Yeah,
or anyone
really
could be in it. It is interesting that there is in the photo that accompanies the article that looks like there is a Twi'lek soldier in the background.
Okay.
In addition to Chewbacca, Lando, Boba Fett, and then Han. So we're getting closer.
Yep.
We're getting closer. All right, what do you got next?
All right, so playing off of that, Chewie caused a Star Wars canon reset. So I got into a huge, huge kind of debate argument with another one of my coworkers, a guy named Mario.
I'm shocked. And, go ahead.
Yeah, because he completely hated The Last Jedi. He was not happy. He felt like it wasn't true to the story. He had all these problems because of all the stuff that got pushed into Legends, and you know he wants all that stuff back. And at one point during our argument, I'm like, well, if you want all the Legends back, then you know Chewbacca's going to be dead. And you know I'm like, that stuff, it's not canon anymore. Just deal with it. And then I saw this story just today. It made me think about that whole big conversation that we had. Where does it go? They were doing an interview with who is it?
You're talking about
Leland Chi.
Yeah,
it was Leland Chi, and he gave a more in-depth explanation for the scrapping of the Star Wars expanded universe and how it ties back to Chewbacca. For me, it came down to simply that we had killed Chewbacca in the Legends. A big moon had fallen on him. Part of the original decision was with Chewbacca, because he can't speak, just speaks and growls, he was a challenging character to write for in the novels. Publishing had decided they needed to kill somebody, and it was Chewbacca. But if you have the opportunity to bring Chewbacca back into the live-action film, you're not going to deprive fans of that. There's no way I'd want to do an Episode 7 that didn't have Chewbacca in it. And I'd have to explain that Chewbacca had a moonfall on his head. And if we were going to overturn a monumental decision like that, everything else was really just a minor in comparison. So one of the best reasons for we just undid it all and started over, and mostly it was for Chewbacca, and I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah, I don't know, they dropped the moon on Chewbacca though. It's like, do you think that might have been a little overkill?
Hey, you had to make sure he was dead. No, he's definitely not coming back. We dropped the moon on him.
We're like, what if you miss? Yeah, I don't know. All right. Okay, let's see. What do I have left? Oh, Justice League Blu-ray details.
So I saw that one.
Apparently, it's going to... I mean, you can own the digital movie on February 13th, but the Blu-ray will come out on March 13th. So are you going to see the Zack Snyder cut on the disc? No. They're going to have a bunch of featurettes with titles like Road to Justice, Heart of Justice, Technology of the Justice League, Justice League the New Heroes, Return of Superman. So there's going to be tons of special features, but no alternate cut. And in addition to that, I did hear that Walmart is going to have an exclusive Blu-ray that will have one additional deleted scene on it.
Okay.
So, there you go for Justice League fans.
That's mostly where I get my DVDs anyway. So, all right. Venom gets Parker, not Spider-Man. So, a report came in on Sony's upcoming Venom film won't be entirely standalone and will film scenes with the current screen incarnation of Spider-Man played by Tom Holland. Previously on several occasions, there had been suggestion it was a possibility. However, depending on whom you asked, at Marvel or Sony, it was either a sure thing or simply wouldn't happen. In a new episode of the Collider Heroes podcast, host John Schnepp has revealed more details and says that Tom Holland has been seen filming scenes on the Venom set, but only as Peter Parker, not as Spider-Man. So there we go. We'll see a tie-in to Venom with Tom Holland. And that makes me very happy because he is my favorite Spider-Man.
Same here. I'm actually out of news stories, so what do you have left?
I will go with the last thing that I find truly interesting. New Mutants being reworked to be scarier. So on Thursday, news came of three upcoming X-Men films are being shifted around on Fox's schedule, with the most notable news being the delay of Josh Boone's The New Mutants spinoffs, which was pushed back almost a full year. The official reason is Fox didn't want any overlap between it and Deadpool 2 opening mid-May. Now, though, the tracking board says the extensive 10-month delay is for another reason, likely reshoots. So they say the film is testing well, but not great, and they want to up the horror and scare quotient of the film. So, especially in the wake of success of R-rated horror like It and Get Out. So they're going for a more horror and scarier feel for New Mutants. I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that either. Yeah, it's not good. And, you know, considering the timing that this comes after the merger.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. But so now all we can do at this point is wait and see. And with the new opening date of February 22nd, 2019, that's over a year and away. So we're going to do a lot of waiting before we do any seeing. And that'll wrap me up.
All right. So that is going to be it for this episode of Backseat Box Office. So our website is backseatproducers.com, where you can find our voicemail number. You can also find back episodes of this show, and you can also find episodes of Backseat Producers, a little more long-form review of movies. Right now, they've been going through Black Mirror episodes. So other than that, backseatproducers.com. And thanks for taking the time to listen to our little show. Art, what do you have to say for yourself?
Good night. Go watch a movie. Call and tell us about it.